I have a dream that all men are created equal.
Together, let's move Australia forward.
You're listening to Never Talk Politics.
Hey guys, I'm Steph McDonald.
And I'm Nick Appleby.
And welcome to another episode of Never Talk Politics, the show that brings you important issues with real people who shape your community. So what are we taking a look at this week?
This week we're going to be looking at what democracy means to young people today. I'll be looking at whether or not the democratic system truly serves the people and what the push for democracy means to a country like Burma.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering why social media sites like Twitter are such an effective way of encouraging young people to participate in our democracy. I'm also thinking about how important youth organisations and other community groups are in encouraging young people to get involved with politics.
So who are you going to chat to today to try and answer some of our questions?
I'm going to chat with Director of the Whitlam Institute, Eric Sidoti, and spokesperson for the grassroots organisation GetUp, Paul Mackay.
Sounds good. I'll be speaking with Charles Sturt University politics lecturer, Dr. Oliver Villa. But before that, let's see what's happening around the world. This week to Israel, and a 14-year-old boy has been arrested and charged with starting the forest fire that took 42 lives and destroyed nearly 5,000 hectares of land. While under interrogation, the teenager admitted that he had been smoking a hookah pipe in the forest and had thrown the leftover burning coals into a clearing, which instantly burst into flames. The boy then claimed that he was so shocked by the fire that he ran back to school and didn't tell anyone what had happened. Earlier in the week, police arrested two other teenagers on suspicion of arson, but they were released after 3 days. The boy's father claims they were nowhere near the blaze when it started. The forest fire is unlike any that Israel has seen before in its scope and destruction. One man describes the horror of witnessing a bus filled with prison guards on its way to evacuate prisoners burst into flames.
People just tried to jump out and were burnt alive. It was a horrible scene and very hard to get to and reminded me of the scene of a bombing.
Among the other tragedies of the disaster was the death of Haifa's deputy police chief, Ahuva Toma, who died in the blaze. Toma was the first woman in the Israeli police force to rise to the rank of deputy police chief and died after following rescuers into the fire in what has been lauded as an act of bravery. The fire is being called the worst in Israeli history, and the full cost of the disaster is still being accounted for. Nikki Rosenfeld, a spokesperson for the Israeli police.
And we're dealing with a huge disaster in terms of the people that have been killed. The numbers we're still counting at the moment. Once again, we're talking about a relatively large number in terms of the type of numbers and incidents that we're dealing with.
At the fire's outset, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made calls to the international community for assistance.
This fire is unique. It's on an international scale. Right now, the necessary means to deal with it are not available, but they are en route. I spoke tonight with the President of Cyprus, with the Greek Prime Minister, and with Spain's Prime Minister. As a result, we now have 10 planes en route to Israel.
23 international aircraft carrying firefighters, supplies and fire-retardant chemicals landed at the Ramat David Israel Air Force Base after the country's fire chief admitted publicly to having lost control of the blazing inferno. Among the countries that heeded the call were Australia, Greece and Russia, but perhaps most surprising was the assistance of Turkey, a sign of a relationship on the mend after a breakdown in diplomatic communication between the two countries. And that's what's happening around the world. I'm Nick Appleby. It was once said that democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the others. While democracy is ideally rule for the people and by the people, many believe that this is still a goal to be attained, and democracy, like any political system, has its flaws. I talked to a lecturer in politics at Charles Sturt University, Dr. Oliver Villa, about the ups and the downs of the democratic system.
What does it mean to be a democratic country in Australia? Well, ideologically, the framework is a liberal framework. So that's the first point. When we're talking about democracy. We're really talking from a perspective of liberalism. So, for instance, an emphasis on the individual, private property, trade, commerce, and that kind of thing.
Two fundamental characteristics of democracy are said to be freedom and equality. Have we achieved these characteristics in the Australian political system?
Well, liberalism doesn't emphasise equality. In fact, you'll find it throughout the literature and the classical liberal thinkers like Thomas Paine, Locke and others. There's very little that's written about equality. In fact, if anything, it's often exaggerated that equality should have any relevance at all. In fact, what the emphasis is freedom for the individual to make money, for instance, to acquire private property, to set up shop, to trade, to commerce, and on a global scale, for countries also to engage in commerce and trade, and those market orientated philosophies that liberalism is founded upon. So really, it must be stressed that liberalism really says very little about equality, if anything, and it's really the emphasis on freedom of private enterprise. Democracy is, in fact, the way we know it, is actually a polyarchy. So what you're looking at is a democracy of the rich. So in practice, what you're really referring to is a democracy of the rich for the rich. And the masses are merely bystanders in a, you know, every 3 or 4 years electoral process, and it's pretty much the same in other Western countries.
Is it possible to have a true direct democracy where the people do make the decisions?
It is possible, but then again, it really comes down to some of the sociological aspects of the question. If you're a pluralist, then that would assume that, you know, all of us, whether you're rich or poor, or you know, whether you're a stakeholder or unemployed, we all have pretty much access to power. However, if you look at the more serious, solid research in political theory and also the sociological aspects of power, you'll find that the elitist theorists would say, well, that's actually not true at all. And the evidence is actually quite compelling. You have haves and have-nots, not only within first world countries like Australia, but also across the world between first world and third world. So if that's the case, then democracy can only be based on privileged groups and unprivileged groups or classes. And so what we're speaking of is an elite or a power elite who are really making decisions and also have access, direct access to power, whereas the majority of the people don't.
Now, I just want to talk about the situation in Burma at the moment, or the Republic of Myanmar. There seems to be a great desire for democracy amongst the people, yet it's still ruled by a military elite. How is this possible?
Well, it's possible because if you look at throughout the third world, that's actually the way things are. It's the way countries are actually run, and largely to a large extent supported or promoted by Western governments. Capitalism is an international system, and in order to be able to, for us, for example, in Australia, to have our our privileges, third world countries need to produce raw materials in order for first world countries to manufacture their goods and services, and in order to do that, they must keep their people repressed. So democracy needs to be deterred. In fact, if anything, it has to be undermined. So that's why you have most of the third world, like Africa, Latin America, Asia, to be completely subjugated by military regimes in order to ensure that the global economic system continues in place. Every now and then, of course, you have, where you have revolts or revolutions or uprisings, which succeed and are able to accomplish some amazing things. We saw that throughout the 20th century with some major revolutions in Eastern Europe and Asia. However, we're living in a moment where the international system is still very strong, so we're still yet to see any of these changes take place, but they are possible. And in Burma, whatever comes out of that process really, again, comes down to not the elite, but the power of the people. If we are to take that seriously, and I think we should, it's something that it is worth fighting for. But then again, there will be resistance by the powerful and the few elite that really don't want to change or give some of their privilege and wealth away.
Never talk politics? That's what we do. Hey guys, I'm Steph McDonald. Today I'm speaking with the director of the Whitlam Institute, Eric Sidoti. The Institute has been doing a lot of research relating to young people and their political participation. They've published three series to date and are currently working on their fourth instalment. One of the papers, called Young People Imagining a New Democracy, found that many young people are not participating as traditionally as they have in the past and want to make a difference instead.
Young people are much less inclined to join or participate in traditional organisations. We've seen much discussion regarding the drop in numbers of membership of the major political parties, of the trade unions, and indeed a whole range of organisations. What we found was that young people are much more aligned to issues than they are to organisations. And so, again, it's no surprise that the environment rates very highly in terms of young people's primary concerns. And they'll tend to be engaged in that issue and will switch the organisations through which they engage, so that they will switch allegiances quite readily. So they're far more fluid than prior generations tended to be. And this raises a number of really interesting questions and important questions about the future of Australian politics, for example, but also the way organisations across the country, whether they're political or otherwise, organise themselves and attempt to reshape themselves in a new environment.
So you mentioned that, you know, young people today are getting passionate about certain issues. So, there are a lot of young people that are joining grassroots activism style groups like the Australian Youth Climate Coalition in Melbourne. Why is supporting a political cause such a popular way for young people to participate in a democracy today?
Yeah, look, that's the million-dollar question. Why it is that it is the issue rather than the organisations that they belong to. The organisation you mentioned, of course, the Australian Youth Climate Coalition, is one of the few examples that we came across of a genuinely youth-established and youth-directed organisation, political organisation. And they've grown quite solidly. It would be interesting to see over the next couple of years to what degree that membership of that organisation remains fairly settled, as opposed to different young people getting involved each year. And, of course, they have a ceiling, I think, of about 25 years of age for active representational membership of that organisation. So it's quite interesting. But you look at an organisation like GetUp, which most people assume, because it is built around its online presence and its online activism, assume GetUp is primarily a youth organisation, which is clearly not the case. In fact, the bulk of its members are baby boomers, and indeed young people will move in and out of that organisation as they do with a number of other organisations. So it's a totally different and very challenging dynamic for organisations.
So I've noticed in the literature review that it touches on compulsory voting. So why is compulsory voting not as popular among young people today? Is it because of the shift in attitudes and experiences of young people?
It's the sort of a split range. I mean, when you do the surveys of young people and say, you know, how they feel about voting, most say they are prepared to, though you do get some anomalies in some of the surveys. And essentially, compulsory voting is a fairly unique Australian approach to citizenship and participation by citizens. And, of course, there's a whole history of debate around the benefits or otherwise of it. The reality is, though, you would have to say that we have one of the highest participation rates when it comes to electoral participation, at least. Well into the 90% range, even allowing for informal votes, but well into the 90% range of Australians actually vote at elections, which is an incredibly high and a very, I think, admirable figure. Basically, there's a question, I think, more around that sense of positive relationship with the political processes, and it's reflected in attitudes towards politicians and reflected in attitudes towards voting. So it's more symptomatic than a cause.
Okay, so just from your own knowledge, what do you believe democracy means for young people today?
Wow, gee whiz. that's a terrific question and a really big one. I suspect what you would find is that it varies as much amongst young people as it does with other age groups. For some, it is really seen as a powerful and positive way for a country to be organised. That basically means that they have a right and a responsibility to vote and select governments and to be involved in shaping the nation, if you like, through various means. So for some, it is without doubt an extraordinarily positive thing that they feel very good about. For others, there's no doubt from our focus groups that you would find that they are ambivalent about democracy in the sense that it is not seen by them to actually be delivering the sorts of government or the sorts of country that they would necessarily want. And there are some, and again, not unlike other organisations, but I have to say a minority who are quite alienated from the whole process altogether and basically sit outside of it or are very reluctant participants. But for young people, unlike the popular myths, they're not, on the whole, apathetic. What we do find is that young people are very engaged. What they tend to be engaged in, though, as I say, is in issues, but also they tend to be very heavily engaged in their own communities. And in other words, what you see is quite understandably, young people engaging in areas where they think they can actually have some sort of meaningful role. And they feel clearly that they're more able to do that in their local communities than on a national stage at this stage.
Shh, never talk politics.
Hey guys, I'm Steph McDonald. Today I'm speaking with Paul Mackay, a spokesperson for independent grassroots organisation GetUp. The not-for-profit community group is run by like-minded individuals who are concerned about Australia's direction and ready to work for change. In particular, GetUp's popular satirical videos have been an exciting way of getting young people involved in issues and participating in our democracy.
A good example is earlier this year when the government was really pushing forward with their proposed internet filter scheme that would see certain websites on the internet blocked from Australian consumption. And a lot of people were really concerned about that. And one of the ways we at GetUp got people concerned about that and got people involved in the campaign for that was by making a satirical video called Sensodyne, where a couple of people in an infomercial style were selling a toothpaste-like product called Sensodyne that really poked fun at the idea of the policy. I think that really connects with people. When they see a policy that they disagree with and they think is ridiculous, it's a very Australian thing to make fun of it through satire. And once people are engaged and once people are thinking, yeah, you know what, that is ridiculous, they have a bit of a laugh, they share it with their friends. And I think that's one of the key things that young people are doing to be involved in politics and the like is sharing things on the internet through social networks. And so the spread of these campaigns goes far and wide. People then become aware about what the issue is, they become informed about what the issue is, and then they might choose to get active through those more traditional political campaigning methods, things like emailing their local MPs or the like. So I think young people really do connect well with satirical videos on certain issues, and it's something that I believe you'll see more of as more organisations like GetUp get a grasp on these sorts of things, and indeed politicians themselves.
So what do you think democracy means for young people today? Is it simply the traditional voting during federal elections and joining political parties, or is it evolving in the way that young people engage in politics, on social media sites and protesting and joining community organisations and that sort of thing?
Yeah, sure. For young people it is. Very much more these days about political engagement in their own terms, in their own playing fields, on those social media sites, like you mentioned. And as election campaigns continue, you'll see politicians increasingly making little YouTube appeals so that people can see see their politicians appealing to them via video on the internet. And I think this is something that young people are commanding. They're saying, well, we need to hear from you, we want to hear from you, but we're not going to a town hall like we might have 30 years ago. We're now sitting on the internet, and we're going to have a watch and consider your policies there, and we're going to tell our friends about those policies via those mechanisms also. So it's definitely more than the strict political within the formal confines of Parliament and that sort of thing. And there is that continued activism element. People, you know, young people will always, as time goes on, be angry about certain things that the government's doing, and there'll always be those sorts of formal protests and marches and the like. But I think, as you say, young people will increasingly demand that politicians enter their spaces, those social media spaces, and that young people will find that they can have real power in those spaces. Certainly, governments can't afford to not appeal to young people. It's such a such a huge voting bloc.
So there is the idea that politics is everywhere around us in all that we do, in the workplace, the community, and even home. Why is it important that young people get involved in and have a voice in politics?
It's always going to be important to have a say in the decisions that affect your lives. And certainly, if we don't stand up and have a say in those decisions, they could have some really negative results. So I think it's important that young people get involved in politics and have a say in those decisions. It's important too for them to know that that they will be listened to. You know, for too long, young people have thought, you know what, I'm not going to have a say. I'm not going to contact my politician or anything like that, because what good will it do? Will they listen to me? I'm not going to go out of my way and then have someone quietly ignore me and go off and make a decision that runs contrary to what I've said. I think it's important that young people know that if they stand up and advocate for their own beliefs, then they will be listened to. And together as a force, as a group of young people, we really have the ability to influence decisions. So if young people are sitting listening thinking, you know what, this is crap, there's nothing we can say to influence the minds of politicians, that's wrong. You know, you can certainly do any number of things, from writing emails to your politicians and writing letters to them, to asking to have a meeting with them and saying, you know what, I really want you to vote for, you know, in this certain way on this certain policy, because I believe it'll better my life in this way. And the politicians will listen. Certainly they can't afford not to, because they need our votes to keep their jobs. So if anyone is listening to this and is keen on getting involved with the work that GetUp does, you can jump onto our website, www.getup.org.au, sign up for our emails, and you can have a say in the sorts of things that we'll be campaigning on in 2011.
You're listening to Never Talk Politics on the Community Radio Network. All right. So what have we heard on the show today, Steph?
Well, we've heard that what democracy means to young people today has really changed from what it's been in the past. Young people today are motivated to make a difference and commit themselves to different causes. They're no longer sticking with the traditional ways of participating in our democracy, you know, voting, joining political parties, that sort of thing. So that's where social media comes into it, and politicians have realised the powerful way that sites like Twitter and Facebook are able to reach young people. The question remains, however, as to what sort of effect it has on a young person's decision to take part in democracy.
I think that the old saying that democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the others, really rings true, especially from a global political viewpoint. While rule of and for the people is something worth fighting for and may someday be attained, we still live in a world of vast inequality and misrepresentation. That's all from us on the program this week, but a reminder that if you have something to say on this week's issue, join the Never Talk Politics Facebook group available online. You can also listen to the podcast of this week's show online at nevertalkpolitics2mce.podbean.com.
Never Talk Politics comes to you via the Community Radio Network. Special thanks to the Community Broadcasting Association for financial support. So what track will we leave our listeners out there with today, Nick?
We're the People by Empire of the Sun.
Remember, whoever you are and whichever way you lean, keep talking politics.